Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Recording in progress.
In introducing Rabbi Leibowitz, I was speaking about how in advance of Yimei Hallel Ve'odah, in the advance of Hanukkah, we try to appreciate the things from the Ribono Shel Olam, the opportunities that he grants us on a regular and daily basis that perhaps we don't always appreciate. And I was focusing on the opportunities for Limud HaTorah from the finest Talmidei Chachamim that we should be appreciative to the Ribono Shel Olam for on a regular basis in our Kehila. Now, I can certainly give that same introduction to our next speaker, to Rabbi Belazon, but I think there's an additional component in introducing Rabbi Belazon that I'd like to highlight this morning. One of the other really special features of our Kehila is the way that we have spiritually fostered and nurtured some real fantastic Talmidei Chachamim and real leaders of Klal Yisrael. And it's something to really take pride in. As members of B'nai Yisrael, whether it be my Rebbe and Rabbi Leibowitz Shlita's Rebbe as well, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, who is a Gadol in Chinuch, or when Rabbi Brzezinski was here a few weeks ago, he mentioned Rabbi Goldberg in South Florida. Every week we have the opportunity to hear words of Torah and inspiration from Rabbi Weinberger. Certainly, very high on that list is the next speaker that we have, Rabbi Eli Belazon. And while it's something that perhaps we kind of, again, have the luxury of taking advantage of, because, of course, Baruch Hashem, we've raised so many leaders of Klal Yisrael. It's something that we shouldn't take advantage of. And I can tell you that if our only accomplishment was nurturing a not just Talmud Chacham, but again, a Marbitz Torah, someone who transmits the Masorah to his Talmidim in Yeshiva University, to his Kehila in Fairlawn, if that were our only accomplishment, Dayenu, just hang his jersey from the rafters and we'd be able to ride off into the sunset, that would be sufficient for us. And it's an incredible supposed to hear words of Torah from him. Now, before I call upon Rabbi Belazon to come up, I want to express one final note of Akar Satov to one more person. Moving from Es Asher Yeshno Po Imanu Hayom to Es Asher Einenu Po Imanu Hayom, this is a morning to also express our collective gratitude and Akar Satov to Dr. Yitzchak Belazon, Havdil Mechaim El Chaim. And certainly, if having Rabbi Belazon share words of Torah for us is a point of pride, For all of us this morning, it's of course a unique piece of pride to his mother Naomi, who is here, and to his father Olav Hashalom. I too never had the opportunity to meet Dr. Yitzchak Belazon, but it has been made clear to me by so many members of this Kehila just how important he was to all of us, just how important he was to building Torah in this community, the infrastructure of Torah. And I will say that despite the fact that I never met him, I genuinely feel a personal debt of gratitude to him for being able to teach Torah in this community and being able to spread Torah in this community. It's quite clear to me that I wouldn't be able to do any of that. I wouldn't be able to do what I seek to do in terms of seeking to teach Torah and to inspire through Torah if it weren't for the foundations that he set. I also want to take the opportunity to read a plaque that we are going to be putting up in our base medrash, Ezes Hashem, dedicating the Torah learning that we do there in memory of Dr. Yitzchak Belazon, Yitzchak Yaakov Ben Tzvi, Zichrono Livracha, who was a living example of Hagisa Bo Yomo Valayla, one of the founders and builders of the Kol Torah in Tinek, and a permanent fixture in this base medrash, the base medrash upstairs, uplifting our community, attending and delivering weekly shiurim, and inspiring others to do the same. There's no better moment, every moment, really, is an appropriate moment to express our Hakaras HaTov to him and to feel the impact that he had on our Kehila. There's no better way of doing so than hearing words of Torah from his son, Rabbi Belazon Shlita.
Thank you, Rabbi Shrive, for your kind words. Really is an emotional experience to be here right now, to see and to share Torah and learn together in this flourishing shul. Growing up in this community, actually in the president's house, across the street, I had the opportunity to be woken up during Pesukah de Zimra with my father wearing his talis coming back across the street, schlepping me into shul. Shul was next door in the rabbi's office right now. That was the original Beis Medrash Minyan, the Nesuch Sfarad Minyan. And it was a place that originally I used to escape from, try to sneak out. But Baruch Hashem, over the years, I developed an appreciation for this incredible Beis HaKnesses that really is a tribute to all the Mispalim, all the Bnei Kehila, really an epicenter of the community, of the broader Bergen County community. But also, not just the Mispalim, the leadership. Rabbi Weinberger, Rabbi Zatz, Rabbi Schreier, really incredible leadership that you lead all of us in the community. But the Beis HaMedrash is also a source and an epicenter of Torah in our greater community. And that was something that my father was also very, very proud of. The fact that this binyan, the structure developed to be one of the main areas to come to learn. I was just talking to one of my Talmidim. I was driving him home from yeshiva yesterday. And he lives right near a big Beis Medrash. I say, do you ever go there? Do you ever go to learn? And you're such so close to that Beis Medrash. He says to me, no. He says, I only go to the Bnei Yeshur. That's the place to be. That's the place to learn. And I was so proud yesterday. So proud to hear that. Because it wasn't always like that. It really is a tremendous Hakar Satov to all of you, to your Rabbanim, to your leaders. But it also is a tremendous, I need to express a tremendous Hakar Satov to Mary Virabi Reb Sobolovsky Shlita. That my father used to try to suck up every word of Torah that dripped out of his mouth and really transformed my father's days in his later years. And to me, is a great Kiddush Hashem. The phone calls that I used to get when I was in Kollel Elyon in YU from my father while he was prescribing medicine in the hospital. At the same time, he was talking to a nurse, he was talking to me about a ritva, about a ktzos that he learned in Kollel Boker. There is no greater Kiddush Hashem that I could imagine than that. People that are working, that are being mefarnes, that are balabatim, that are working hard, but they're starting, they're bookending their days with Talmud Torah. It's really such a schus to be a child of a family that grew up in such a kehila. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless all of you to continue on that direction. Rishus, Rabbanim, Rishus, Rabbi Sobolovsky Shlita, Rishus, Rabbi Leibowitz, Rabbi Schreier, Rabbi Weinberger, Rishus, Imi Morosi. I'd like to dedicate today's shiur in addition to my father's Aliyas Neshama Yitzchak Yaakov Ben Tzvi. I'd also like to dedicate the Zchus Refuah Shleima of Esther Bas Reitza, but also a close Yedid of mine, who also is a tremendous source of inspiration for me. And that inspiration occurs when I walk into this Beis HaKnesses, and when I have the opportunity to daven here. There's a mispalel here that struggles and drags himself to both daven, b'mekayim tefila b'tzibur, to learn, and it's something that's not simple. And that's Yaakov Meir Rachmil Ben Chaya. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer all of our tefillas, and may he have a speedy recovery so that he can continue inspiring us in our tefila, in our avodas Hashem, and join us back in the tzibur in Kehilas Bnei Yeshurun. I have to mention, after that introduction and that beautiful shiur from Rabbi Leibowitz, that my copy and my father's copy of the Beis Yishai was bought and was given to us by none other than the Gabbai here, Chaim Kiss. Chaim Kiss is a Talmud of Yeshiva Zitri. If you want to have another hour, I'm sure he can give you different style stories. But Yashikoyach to Chaim. And I was probably that kid who was in Rav Shlomo Fisher's class in fifth grade that made him go to the mirror. I'd like to speak about a topic today that's a very relevant topic, a very important shaila, that at first glance really has nothing to do with the Chag of Chanukah. But ultimately, I think it's very much connected to the Yontif of Chanukah. I, Baruch Hashem, have been blessed, Siyata Deshmaya, with a young shul. And some of the shailas that I'm faced with, unfortunately, happened already a few times, is that sometimes when the kids are running around, sometimes they run into the wrong places, and they get some gashes on their face, on their bodies. And there's a shaila when that happens on Shabbos. How do you deal with that? What is the din about stitches on Shabbos? I see Dr. Katz over here. I remember growing up when I was in fifth grade, and I used to run around like that, so the place to go was Dr. Brian Katz. That's the one who would take care of it. But there's some very serious shailas. Obviously, pikuach nefesh, when you have an open wound, much of the time that has to be taken care of immediately. But then there's a shaila not so much for the patient, but the shaila is more relevant for the doctors. The doctors could suture up to a certain extent to remove the pikuach nefesh and add a few stitches to close up the wound. The question is, what happens if I want to add some more stitches? I want to finish the job in order to make sure that there isn't a major scar and we can do a nice job, clean it up in the face to make sure to add some more stitches. This is potentially a very serious shaila, because every step of the way, it's true at the beginning, there's pikuach nefesh, and pikuach nefesh overrides all aspects of Shabbos. However, once you get to the beauty, once you get to the scar, then it gets a little complicated. Because what is the heter at that point in time to continue violating a potential malacha of tofer, of stitches, of sewing, when it's no longer a pikuach nefesh scenario? So I'd like to start today's sugya from a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos in source number one tells us, the son of Rabbanan, in the middle of the first line, Hamal calls manshu osik b'mila, choser bein al titzin ma'akvenes amila, bein al titzin she'ein ma'akvenes amila. The Gemara tells us that if a mo'el is involved in the process of mila, so there are different parts of the foreskin that has to be removed. Some of that is essential in order to fulfill the mitzvah, and some of it is not as essential. So the Gemara says you can cut the entire foreskin. Bein tzitzin shema'akvin, bein tzitzin she'enema'akvin. Even that little remnants that is not essential, as long as you're involved in the process of the mila, so then you can continue doing so and remove the entire foreskin. However, the Gemara qualifies. Piresh, but if the mo'el put his knife down, if he took a break, if he interrupted and he was not continuing that original mila and cutting process, al tzitzinai ma'akvenes amila choizer, if he realized he didn't complete the job, if he realized that there was some foreskin that was left, so if it's an amount of foreskin that is ma'akev es amila, tzitzin ha-ma'akven es amila, then chozer, then he should go back, pick the knife up again, and continue. Al tzitzin she'ein ma'akven es amila, but if it's the amount that's not essential, if it's just a little remnants, and it doesn't hold back from the fulfillment of the mitzvah, so then eino chozer, then he should just finish, should go downstairs and celebrate with the Suda, and he doesn't have to continue the meal. So what's the context of this Gemara? I mean, I hired a mole. I'm paying the mole over here. Finish the job. I mean, if you left some paint in my house, so I'd like you to finish the job, even if it's just a little amount of paint. Finish the job. Why wouldn't you go back and finish the job? Even if it's tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin es amila. So what? So it's not essential. But I'd like you to do and perform a mila. So comes along Rashi in source number two on his commentary in the Gemara. And Rashi says, one word. Hamol b'Shabbos. The context of the Gemara is talking about a situation where you're violating technically a malacha when you're performing the milah. Now it's true. The Torah tells us in Parshas Tazria, you have to violate that malacha. Whatever that malacha is, Netilas Neshama, whatever it is, one of the Lamentes Malachos is violated when we perform a milah on Shabbos. So there's a chiddush over here, comes along Rashi. The halacha is that you're allowed to perform the milah. And as long as you don't separate, and as long as you don't interrupt, and you continue going, says Rashi, you can even cut skin that's not necessarily essential. That's not necessary. It's okay. However, comes along the Gemara, according to Rashi, and the Gemara says, but if you stopped, if you already finished that initial cutting, and you put the knife down, so now we gotta reassess over here. Now we have to cheshbon. Why are you going back? Why are you doing a malach over here? Is this really necessary? Are you going back for tzitzit hama'akvin? Are you going back for foreskin that now is going to now be relevant whether or not you're going to fulfill the mitzvah or not? If not, so then don't pick up the knife again. So then don't go back and cut. Rashi makes a lot of sense. Because otherwise I would have told the mohel, finish the job. However, when you look at the Rambam in source number 3, it doesn't seem that the Rambam had this perspective. The Rambam tells us in Hilchos Milah, in source number 3, Hamal, a moil that's in the process of Milah, Kozman she'oisik b'Milah, choizer ben altitzin ha'ma'akvin, ben altitzin she'en ma'akvin. The Rambam codifies this Gemara, like we saw. As long as he's in the process, as long as he's continuing that procedure, and he didn't put the knife down, so you should cut both the tzitzin ha'ma'akvin and the tzitzin she'en ha'ma'akvin. But then the Rambam says, Pirish, if he interrupted, if he stopped, if he paused, al tzitzin ha'ma'akvin choizer, al tzitzin she'en ha'ma'akvin eino choizer. So the Rambam really didn't tell us anything new. The Rambam really just brought down the Gemara la'alacha. But the Rambam left out a very important word that Rashi added in. The Rambam never tells us that this took place on Shabbos. And the proof to this is the Rambam only introduces the concept of Mila overriding Chilo Shabbos in Halacha Vav. Osin kol tzarchei l'mila b'Shabbos. Sounds like the Rambam held that this Gemara, this Chiddush of the Gemara in Kuf Lamed Gimel in source number 1 is relevant even on a weekday. And if that's the case, it really begs the question we asked earlier, how could you say that? Why should that be? Finish the job. It's like the painter. We hired you to do a service. Why wouldn't you even take care of the tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin eshamim? How do we understand the Shitas HaRambam L'chora Rashi and it's codified in Halacha and the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin La'alacha that this is a din in Shabbos? So the answer to this question lies in a theory of the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav had a fascinating explanation to this Rambam / Rashi that lies in an analysis of the Yontif of Chanukah. If you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, the Rambam is telling us what the Gemara in Shabbos details, that we have a tremendous emphasis on the concept of hiddur mitzvah when it comes to the Yontif of Chanukah. The Gemara says there are different stages to the performance of the mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah. Technically, a person lights one candle, he's yotzei the ikar ha-mitzvah. If a person wants to add mahadrin, so then he adds another candle, keneged the bnei abayis. If a person wants to add mahadrin min ha-mahadrin, so then he adds, corresponding to the days of Chanukah, and there is a tremendous, tremendous fulfillment of Hiddur Mitzvah incorporated into the Mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah. So when the Rambam brings this down, la'alacha, he says in source number 4, Halacha Aleph, Kama Neiros Humadlik B'Chanukah, Mitzvasa Shiyakol Bayis Ubayis, Madlik ner echad. The mitzvah is that every household should light one candle. Bein shahayu anshe habayis merubim, bein shalo hayu ela adam echad. No matter how many people are living in that house, even if there's one person or there's many people. V'hamahader, but someone who's beautified, who's taking the mitzvah to the next level. Hamahader sa mitzvah, madlik neiris k'minyan anshe habayis. So he develops the mitzvah to the next stage, that now he lights the amount of candles corresponding to the individuals living in that house. Ner l'chol echad ve'echad, bein anoshim, bein noshim. But then the Rambam says, v'hamahader yeser al zeh. But someone wants to take it to the next level, to the greatest level of mahadrin. Oysim mitzvah min amuvcher madlik ner l'chol echad ve'echad b'layla arishon. So now he doesn't only light a candle corresponding to all the individuals of the household, but he adds an additional candle based on every subsequent night that he celebrates and he performs this mitzvah on the Yom Tov of Chanukah. Similarly, in source number 5, the Rama writes, V'yesh oimrim d'chol echad mibnei abayis yadlik. The Rama also writes that the Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, the highest level of hiddur, of beautification of this mitzvah, is that we should light candles corresponding to all of the individuals of this house. Yet, there's a major difference between the way the Rambam brought this halacha down and the way the Rama in Shulchan Aruch brought this halacha down. Although they both agree, which not everyone agreed to, although they both agree fundamentally that the highest level of hiddur, the highest level of beautification is to light candles not only corresponding to the Anshe Habayis, but also corresponding to the nights of Chanukah. However, who is the Madlik is the major question. When the Rambam brings this halacha down, the Rambam tells us the same person that was fulfilling the Ikra Mitzvah, the original performance of the mitzvah, that one candle, that same individual is the one who lights more candles for all of the levels of Mahadrin. Rambam never changes from that first word, Kama Neros Hu Madlik B'Lashon Yachid. Who is lighting? The Balabayis is lighting. Whereas when it comes to the Rama, there's a subtle difference. The Rama tells us, no. The Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, when you're lighting all those candles, it's not the Baal HaBayis that's lighting, but those Bnei HaBayis are actually lighting their own menorahs, like is our practice in many of our homes. What's the difference? Why is it that the Rambam and the Rama and Shulchan Aruch disagreed about who will perform that hinder, that enhancement, that beautification of the mitzvah? Comes along the Brisker Rav, and the Brisker Rav says he thinks that this all emanates from our original debate regarding Mila on Shabbos. We ask, the Rambam tells us that when we instruct the Moel, if you're Piresh, if you interrupt and you stop and you pause the Mila and you put the knife down, you do not return for the tziktin that are ena ma'akvin, for that part of the foreskin that is not essential. And the Rambam doesn't mention anything like Rashi said, that this is restricted to and specific to Shabbos. And we asked, what would be the issue if it's a regular weekday? Finish the job, go back. So it comes along the Brisker Rav, and the Brisker Rav says, well, maybe the Rambam holds tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin are ein ma'akvin. They're not essential. So what are they a fulfillment of? They're a fulfillment of hiddur mitzvah. Hiddur mitzvah also applies to the mitzvah of bris milah. The Gemara tells us hiddur mitzvah applies to many of the mitzvahs that we have. To a talis nah, right? To a sefer Torah, to a milah. So tzitzit she'ein ma'akvin, to leave over some of the foreskin, even if it's not essential, even if you'll fulfill the mitzvah technically, but we want you to fulfill it in totality. But what is necessary in order for you to have hiddur mitzvah? Says the Rambam, you have to be involved in the performance of the mitzvah. It has to be linked. It has to be connected to the Maisa HaMitzvah. So if you now want to fulfill Hiddur Mitzvah, you can't interrupt and you can't be pirish from the essential Maisa HaMitzvah. The second you stop that original cutting, so now there is no way for a person to perform Hiddur Mitzvah. Whereas it could be that Rashi, who did not explain the Gemara to even be relevant on a weekday, Rashi, who said, no, of course, on a weekday, you could return back to that milah. What's the problem? Of course we would like you to do a nice job. Said the Brisker Rav, because Rashi held that Hiddur Mitzvah can exist independently. Rashi held that Hiddur Mitzvah, even if you stop, you can always go back for it. Hiddur Mitzvah does not have to be joined and connected to that original Maisa HaMilah, to that essential part of the removal of the foreskin. So therefore, Rashi had to hold that this chiddush of the Gemara that distinguishes between the tzitzit ha-ma'akvin and tzitzit she'ein ha-ma'akvin, depending on whether or not the mole put the knife down and makes a chiluk la'alacha, it had to be on Shabbos. Because I couldn't have explained this price in any other way. Because in the weekday, of course, you would go back for Hiddur Mitzvah. Because Hiddur Mitzvah could exist independently of the original Maisa HaMitzvah. Said the Brisker Rav, perhaps the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch is Lishitosam and is holding like that line of thought and saying that when you're deciding who can light the Hiddur Mitzvah, when it comes to Neiros Hanukkah, it doesn't have to be connected to the original Madlik, to the original Balabais, to the person who lit that essential candle, that Kiyum HaMitzvah, that first, the Chiyuv of every night of Hanukkah before the Mahadran. No. You light your Hanukkah, and I'll be a representative of Hiddur independently, and everyone in the house will light their own Neiros Hanukkah. Why can't Hiddur Mitzvah exist independently and be lit by another individual, by the Bnei HaBayis, like the Ramah says, similar to the way Rashi held in the Gemara and Shabbos by the mitzvah of Milah? So this is what the Brisker Rav explains in terms of Hiddur Mitzvah. But there's another very important dimension to this analysis that we need to focus on right now. So according to Rashi, who holds in the weekday, come on, finish the job. Go back. The painter has to finish the job. The mole has to finish the job. Finish the job. Whether it sits in a makvin, sits in an ancient makvin. I want things to look nice. Hiddur Mitzvah could exist outside of connecting it to the essential mitzvah. Well, 1 second. So what's the reason on Shabbos that I have the ability to finish that original act of cutting? If it's not essential, so why do I have the ability to actually violate more of a malacha and continue cutting for that non-essential foreskin, for that tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin? And don't tell me that the reason is because Hiddur Mitzvah must be Doicha Shabbos. Because if that were to be the case, then Rashi would tell me that if I have tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin, even if I put the knife down, why can't I go back? If Hiddur Mitzvah, which is Tzitzin Chein Ma'akvin, has the ability to override Shabbos, why does the Gemara tell the Moel, Impirish on Shabbos, don't go back for the Tzitzin Chein Ma'akvin? It must be that Hiddur Mitzvah cannot override Shabbos. And only the essential mitzvah is what's docha and pushes aside Shabbos and allows you to be Mechal Shabbos. But then the obvious question is, so then why, when I'm not separating and interrupting, and I don't put the knife down, am I allowed to continue cutting for the tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin es ha'milah? The Rambam will tell us, no, Hiddur Mitzvah is Doicha Shabbos. And the reason why there's a difference between stopping the milah process and not continuing the milah process and interrupting the milah process for tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin es ha'milah is because if you interrupt, then you don't have Hiddur Mitzvah anymore. Hiddur Mitzvah has to be a continuation from that original cutting.
So of course hider mitzvah is docha Shabbos, but you better make sure that you have hider mitzvah, like the Brisker Rav explained to us. But according to Rashi and the Rambam, that hold no. Hider mitzvah could exist independently. I can light my own candle as a Bnei Abayis, as a fifth grader across the street. I'm allowed to do that. I can make a bracha. Hider mitzvah can exist independently. So then let's bring it back to Hilchos Mincha. Why is it that when I put down my knife, that I no longer can be Mechal Shabbos? It must be that Rashi held hider mitzvah is not docha Shabbos. So then why is it again that when I continue cutting, that I'm allowed to cut the tzitzit shein hamakanas hamila? So apparently there must be another reason and rationale that Rashi was holding. And that was a concept called Maisa Echad. When a person continues his original action, it gets and it's governed by the original action as long as you didn't interrupt it. So something that Rabbi Yosef Engel develops in many different areas of halacha. He writes, when it comes to the halacha of Yibum, so the Gemara discusses that sometimes there's a marriage and a connection between individuals in Yibum that is a function of Isser, that they're not necessarily allowed to be together in a normal Shidduch. But the Gemara presents the idea of Aseh Deichalais Aseh, that you can connect these two individuals and they're allowed to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum, even though they're a forbidden relationship. But when do you fulfill the mitzvah? Many of the Rishonim explain. At the beginning of the cohabitation process, of the Bia process. And yet, the Rishonim say you're allowed to continue, to have Gemar Bia? Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, yeah. Because if you're continuing that same action, it's all governed by that essay de chalois essay of that original action. Yosef Engel gives an example of this that we face every day when we put on tefillin. The Magen Avraham discusses the fact that halachically we're yotze the mitzvah of tefillin, and we just put it on our bicep and we tie a knot. Yet we often wrap all the straps around our arm, even though they're not essential. And if a person is wounded, he doesn't even have to do that. And we make a hefsek and interrupt before the bracha that's really going on the Shel Rosh as well. Why do we do that? So the Rabbi Yosef Engel argues in this piece, it's the same idea. When you're doing Maisa Echad, when you're continuing that same action, so then it's not an interruption. And there are countless examples of this concept. Perhaps Rashi also held of this concept of Maisa Echad. It's true. Hider mitzvah tzitzin she'ena ma'akvenes amila cannot override Chilul Shabbos. But if you're continuing that same Maisa Amila, if you're continuing that same procedure, that same process, then you have the ability to override Shabbos and to be governed with the heter and the permissibility that you had at the original stage of the milah when you began to perform the essential mitzvah. Comes along Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach extrapolates from this analysis of Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Milah, and he brings it back home to that very relevant shaila that we have when it comes to stitches on Shabbos. You're faced with that situation. The doctor wants to know, can I continue stitching up this individual? But the heter of pikuach nefesh is no longer existent. I did what needed to be done. I stopped the blood. There isn't an infection that's going to go into that gash anymore. Baruch Hashem. But I'd like to really continue suturing. I'd like to continue the stitches to make sure that there isn't a scar. There isn't a scar. What's that heter? That's not pikuach nefesh. What allows you to continue with those sutures? Comes along Rav Shlomo Zalman and he says, wait a second. Maybe we can extrapolate from the sugya of Hilchos Chanukah. Maybe we can borrow from the ideas in Hilchos Milah, from the shita of Rashi, that held even though hider mitzvah is not Deicha Shabbos, yet as long as you don't interrupt, as long as you didn't put that knife down, as long as you were continuing that original process and procedure, so then we allow you to even cut what? The titzin, she'ein ma'ak v'nesan milah. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman brilliantly in his tshuva, in his second chelek, in source number 6, save time, we won't read it all inside, but Sefer Shlomo Zalman, I can glean from the analysis of Rashi and the Ramah that we were developing in Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Milah, that perhaps will help us also outside of the rules and regulations of Hiddur Mitzvah, to help us also for the stitches and helping this child that has a potential scar on their face and can allow the doctor to continue stitching. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, anyone who really goes through carefully the sugya is a little hesitant, because that same idea, that same logic, doesn't necessarily exist according to the Rambam. You see, according to the Rambam, the heter for you to cut the tzitzit shei d'ma'akvin when you're not interrupting is because what? Tiddur mitzvah. Now, not having a scar on your face is hiddur mitzvah. She really reminds me, one of my rebbeim once told me, it's a hiddur mitzvah for you to marry a pretty wife. So, unless you hold like that, it's a big chiddush to say like that. He quoted from the Derech Pikudecha, but it's a stretch, I think, to say hiddur mitzvah in such a realm. But I think the Rav Shlomo Zalman is sensitive to this. Rav Shlomo Zalman says that's not the only heter I'm relying on. Truth is, there's a major debate amongst the poskim. We're not going to be machria right now, but there is a tremendous debate. This is a machlokes between the Bi'ur Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, and the Magid Mishnah. The Rambam has an interesting line when he talks about pikuach nefesh for a chola on Shabbos. Osin lo kol tzarchav b'Shabbos. We can do anything for the chola on Shabbos. So if a person literally translates the Rambam, it sounds like you could turn on the television for the chola on Shabbos. Is it really true? Osin lo kol tzarchav b'Shabbos? So that far I wouldn't go. But the Magid Mishnah thought that even non-essential needs, even non-prikuach nefesh criteria, even non-life-changing and life-saving activities, are not necessary. That's not what we're restricted to. And also no kol tzarchav. Maybe if you need some hot soup, or maybe if you need something that will actually help him heal, maybe one is permitted, as long as you start off that this is a person that's in a pikuach nefesh scenario. And this is something that actually is debated in the yeshiva world. The Brisk Rav actually had a much more lenient, as shocking as that sounds, much more lenient view when it came to this halacha. And he thought that one could accept the Magid Mishnah of Osin Lo Chol Tzarchav. Rav Shachter has told me that in Voloshin, that was the practice. And the Netziv also had this more lenient view of Pikuach Nefesh. So if you accept that Magid Mishnah, even though the Mishnah Berurah was very hesitant to implement that into halachic practice, but we still remember that there are shittas that hold like that, that you can actually do other non-essential and non-life-saving procedures for this individual. If that's the case, maybe the doctor can continue stitching, also because it's also mochol tzorecha. This is definitely a tzorech, and for sure a psychological tzorech of this chayla. But in addition, one really has to question the entire premise of the tshuva of Shlomo Zalman. Many poskim don't even agree to the question that I just asked. Shlomo Zalman begins his tshuva and he assumes, and he quotes many sources, that we're for sure in biblical territory when we're analyzing this situation of stitches on Shabbos, of the doctor performing stitches on Shabbos, of suturing this gash, this wound. However, one could question that entire premise. One could question, is this really true? Does this really look like stitches? You're doing stitches on the body of an individual. Do malachas apply to the body of an individual? So the truth is, the Gemara does talk about Malachas Bone. When Hashem created Chava, the Gemara says that the Torah says in Parshas Bereishis, Vayiven es Hatzela, that was the source of Binyan. It's important for us to remember, the source of Binyan existed by the development of the female. The source of the Binyan, the source of the Bayis, in that Gemara. And the Gemara learns from there that braiding hair might be a Malach on Shabbos. The Rambam talks about writing on skin. But that could be a Malacha on the Gufa Adam, on a person's body. So Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks
And so too, stitching and putting these two sides of a wound together is the malacha of tofer, is no different than sewing up a garment and putting that together. However, I'd just like to share an idea of Rav Sternbach in his Tshuvas Van Haggis, where the truth is he disagrees with the analysis of Rav Shmuel Zalman in terms of everything we developed in the first heter, but he thinks it might not be a biblical violation for an entirely different reason. He thinks that Baruch Hashem, we are zoche to the Rachmanis of Shamayim, and most of the time, when you have a gash, so that's something that eventually will heal. That's something that it might not look good and it might be dangerous right now, but it's something that the Rabbeinu Shalom created and brought into the Teva, that these are two pieces of skin that are going to now form and heal together, like the way our scabs do. So comes along Rav Sternbach, and he suggests, perhaps that doesn't represent tefillah. Perhaps that's not like two independent items and threads that would have never joined together and don't even exist together and only are together because I brought them together. That's a classic tefillah. Masha Enkin, you have something that now I was just mechazik, their connection, but ultimately, fundamentally, they are connected and they will be connected on their own. So perhaps this isn't a violation of tefillah as well. So perhaps because of all of these things, and Rav Shmuel Zalman says, there are people who disagree with me, he acknowledges that. He says, because of all of these questions, that number one, fundamentally, from Hilchos Chanukah, Hilchos Milah, we have a heter to continue the stitches, according to Rashi. But even according to Shitas HaRambam, that we wouldn't have necessarily concluded this heter, but there are further questions. Number one, Osin Lo Kol Tzrachov. Maybe a choyla is permitted, according to the Magen Mishnah, to do non-essential procedures. And in addition, my whole premise might be wrong. And this might not be a biblical violation of tefillah for other arguments. And there are other arguments that I'm not going to get into right now of why this doesn't represent tefillah, like Rav Sternbach presented. And for all of these reasons, Rav Shmuel Zalman thinks that it would be mutter to continue this process and finish the stitches, even when it's no longer a situation of pikuach nefesh. I'd just like to close with the idea that I think Rav Shlomo Zalman's brilliance over here, his collection of different sources, I think is not a coincidence. And I think that there was a tremendous level of hashkacha that this all emanates from the sugya of Chanukah and the Yom Tov that we are about to celebrate. We all know that Yavan is a source of Chachma. We all know that Yavan is also Yofi. The Torah tells us that the great-grandfather of Yavan is Yaftalahim Liefes, is Yofi, is the source of Yofi in the world. Yet, we celebrate the victory against Yavan. So is it that we contradict Yofi? We don't accept Yofi and beautification in the world of Torah, in the world of mitzvahs? So I think the answer to this question lies in the shir that we just shared. We have a situation, a gash, a wound, a potential scar, and our initial knee-jerk reaction is, wait a second! On this face, there's going to be a wound. On the surface level, there's going to be a problem over here. So let's navigate our lives based on the Yofi, the fact that it's going to appear, it's going to be difficult. But we stop for a second. And we analyze. And we develop. And we look in sugyas of Chanukah. We look in sugyas of Milah. And we try to find a heter to ultimately fulfill and create a matzav and a situation of Yofi, but not just because of a superficial perspective. The Torah says, Yaftalakim liyefes. The Torah says 100% there is Yofi in the Torah. But you know when? When it's Vayishkoin be'oil leshein. When it's guided. When it's rooted with shame. With the world of Torah. That's where Yofi is relevant. That's Yofi according to the Torah. The Gemara Megillah tells us that when you write a Sefer Torah, it's got to be written B'Loshon HaKodesh. There was one exception to the rule. And that is what?
That is Yavanus. You're able to write a Sefer Torah with Yavanus. Because Yavan's beautiful. Yavan has a beautiful language. Yavan has incredible chachma. Yet, the whole celebration of Hanukkah is choshech from the Yavan. It's hichshichu eneim shel Yisrael. Because the biggest danger of a world of Yofi, devout and disconnected from Torah, from the oil of shame, is Yavan. And that's the Yontif of Hanukkah. And that's the Yontif of Hanukkah, Rabbi Say, that I believe we've never celebrated like we have to celebrate this year in Tavshin Pei Beis. Unfortunately, the world of Choshech, the world of Yofi, that superficial perspective of beauty, that empty beauty, that's what Choshech is. It's Heder Or. It's a lack of light that needs to be illuminated by the Hanukkah, by the Yontif of Torah. And that's what Yosef is. Svar Makdosh and the Nei Sosra speaks, the Beis Yishai speaks about how Yosef is the same numerical value as Melech Yavon, is the same numerical value as Antiochus. Yosef, as Rabbi Leibowitz said so beautifully, the Chanukah, Mesiba, is from the celebration with Yosef, like the Shulti B'Gaborim says. Beautiful. Yosef is the antidote to this misconception of Yofi. Yosef was Yifei Tor, Yifei Mara. Yosef was the ultimate source of beauty. Yosef didn't get caught up with the superficial beauty of Mitzrayim, with the surface level beauty. Yosef had a beauty, had a Yifei Tor, Yifei Mara, that was rooted in Torah, that was Ben Zikunim, Bar Chakima. That's true Yofi. That's taking a world of Choshech, a world of Yaman, and lighting up a candle. When you're in a dark room, the only way for you to navigate yourself is mishmush, touching the surface. Ha'iver m'mashmish ba'afeila. The one who's blind needs to touch in order to navigate. Comes the Yom Tov Chanukah and approaches the world of Yofi and brings out such beautiful aspects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world by lighting a candle in that dark room, by illuminating what true Yofi is. Yosef Matza Chayin Be'enei Beis HaSor. Yosef found favor. He was so bechant. Child, a Jewish child, has such a beautiful face, is also so bechant, has so much chayin because of his future, because of his connection, because of his little mitzvahs that he does. That's the Yom Tov of Chanukah. Chayin is the Rosh Teves Ner Chanukah. This is the opportunity for us to learn the sugya of Yofi, of Hiddur Mitzvah, and celebrate the Yom Tov of Chanukah and illuminate our lives. Mirtz Hashem, give a bracha at this Beis HaKnesses with this new Rav who I am so excited about. I can't even tell you. Baruch Hashem, really tremendous, tremendous Rav that existed prior. Baruch Hashem, I've spent the last few weeks, I once was speaking about how sometimes children develop later in life. In the drasha, and Rav Krasansky was sitting right there. And I said, he can tell you about the fifth grade and fill in the details. Baruch Hashem, I was zeiche to the tremendous leadership up until now, but I'm so excited. Rabbi Schreier's leadership, and Amir Tzashem, the Hiddur Mitzvah, and the Yofi, and Amir Tzashem will bring us to the Yafei Nof, Misos Kol Haaretz, to the ultimate edifice of Yofi, Mirtz Hashem, in the Chinuch, after this Chanukah of the Beis HaBigdash, in Heira Yomein.